I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Beginning today, Thursday, the 24th of September, people in British Columbia through the Vancouver International Film Festival and Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba through the Calgary International Film Festival will be able to see the new documentary from the filmmaker Cheryl Fogo, John Ware Reclaimed. I didn't know who John Ware was. I'd never read the Grant McEwen book from the 1960s, so it was fascinating to learn about the black cowboy who had settled in Alberta before the turn of the 20th century. Over the course of this film, Ms. Fogo presents the view of Ware heretofore, and then she uncovers the mystery of Ware and his roots. He was enigmatic, and it's interesting to see how much is really known and the work Cheryl goes through to present a more rounded picture of a major figure in Alberta's and Canada's history. Cheryl Fogo is an award-winning author, playwright, and filmmaker. The play, John Ware Reimagined, was a critical success several years ago and won numerous awards. Her Twitter handle is at CDFogo. That's CDFOGGO. John Ware Reclaimed is produced and distributed by the National Film Board of Canada's Northwest Studio in Edmonton. Visit VIFF.org for more information on how to see the film virtually between now and October 7th. Please welcome to the Plant Online program Cheryl Fogo. Ms. Fogo, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So John Ware isn't as well known as he ought to be, but if he is known at all, what's the way he's been regarded?
Well, for those who have heard of him, he is regarded as an incredibly skilled horseman. You know, just in case there are people who don't know anything at all about him, he's a black cowboy who came up to southern Alberta in 1882 from the U.S. on the first major cattle drive, and he quickly established himself as a great horseman and a really skilled business person and ultimately a successful rancher. So that's how he's regarded. He's remembered as a figure from our early settler history who was impressive and is remembered by people.
And a lot of how people have perceived him, I guess, could that be the responsibility of the Grant McEwen book on him?
I would say most people who know anything about him have either read the Grant McEwen book or have read or seen something that was inspired by that book or based on it. Yes, that's a fair characterization.
And I understand that it was your brother who first got you interested in Ware, is that right, after a visit to the Glenbow Museum?
Yes. We were very interested in cowboys and horses and the prairies and all of that mythology. And my brother went to the Glenbow Museum and saw a display that included a photo of John Ware, and I think there were a couple of his artifacts that were there at that time. That was the first we knew that an incredibly skilled black cowboy had lived in our part of the world.
He describes it in the book. He's really excited about finding out that someone that is black, that he hadn't heard of heretofore, existed. I mean, it says something about representation, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It's interesting. My brother Richard and I, have tried to pinpoint why we had heard the name John Ware prior to that. We think it was because of our obsession with cowboys, and yet we didn't know that he was a black cowboy. Given that we were from a small black community that was here in Calgary at that time, we do find it puzzling that knowledge of him was not extended to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some ways still isn't being extended to people who live in this part of the world. And as you pointed out at the beginning, he's not as well known as he should be.
Right. And was it from that time You've literally kept a file on him?
Not from that very time, because I was, 11 or 12 years old at that time. His was one of the first files that I started, however, when I realized I want to be a writer and these are the stories I want to tell. I want to tell stories of Black life and Black history in Western Canada. His was one of the first files that I established.
And I'm sure you're asked a lot, especially now, about what it is about Ware that captivated you so.
You know, in some ways, the things about him that captivated me are the same things that captivate everyone who learns of him. He was a compelling and charismatic figure, and that comes through, even through the history. He was, you know, tall and handsome and funny. You know, you read stories of things that he said, and you realize he was just very smart, very funny. So I think that he was living in a world that was, you know, that was largely white. I mean, he was not the only Black person here. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there were hundreds, thousands of Indigenous people here, and there were people from other racialized groups as well. But the world that he operated in, that world of the rancher and the cowboy, was pretty white. And so he stands out in that regard as a person who was able to navigate a world that held so many challenges and that had obstacles for him.
Now, the person that portrays Ware in your film, the first thing I noticed was he looks the part of a cowboy. And then I realized as I watched the credits that it's Fred Whitfield, who's a champion calf roper. The thing about Whitfield in the film that's just fascinating is, I'm trying to remember now, I don't think we even hear from him, do we?
No, that was intentional.
Yeah, but his eyes just say so much. And they evoke what I've felt throughout the film, just how enigmatic the character of Ware is in the movie. How did you find Whitfield, and how do you direct a guy like him for a film like this?
Luckily, I didn't have to boss him around very much at all, because he's the person that knows how to ride a horse. He's the person that knows how to move around the cattle and whatnot. I found Fred Whitfield through the Stampede, given that the Stampede is a part of my life every summer. And I had talked with my producer, Bonnie Thompson, at that time, about wanting to have the presence of John Ware, just feeling like archival photographs weren't going to be enough to really evoke his spirit in the way that I wanted to. Yeah. And she said, if you could have anyone, who would it be? And I said it would be Fred Whitfield, but I thought at that time that's a real long shot. And it just so happened that he was coming up for the Stampede to compete in the rodeo, and Bonnie reached out to his management and made it happen. In terms of what it was like to direct him, as I say, because I wasn't asking him to act, I was just asking him to be.
Yeah.
I was just asking him, you know, to ride and walk and sit by the fire. He just aced it. You know, as you say, his eyes, his facial expressions, he just was able to be and to put himself into the world and perhaps the mind of John Ware at that time. I think the fact that we were on John Ware's land was an impressive experience for him as well. He was very curious. You know, he was asking lots of questions about, well, you know, where was his house, and how much of this land did he actually occupy, and asking about details of his day-to-day life. So it was a mutually interesting situation.
There's a moment in the film where you talk about what it's like to be on the land itself, and you're telling someone in the movie about how every time you're there, it evokes certain feelings. What does it feel like for you when you're on John Ware's land?
It's a very, I become quite emotional when I'm on his land, and those emotions are varied. There's a kind of a peacefulness that settles over me. There's a kind of being able to occupy a space that feels timeless on some level, just a kind of elevated sense of being alive and here in the present, and also being in communion with that past and with my own ancestral past and with John Ware as a kind of symbolic ancestor in the past. It's very difficult to describe, and I actually don't fully understand why I get such a powerful, why I have such a powerful response to being on the land and in the places that he once walked and lived.
It's a beautiful part of the world, and one of the nice things about the film is you take us there during various parts of the year, so we get a sense of what it's like when there's snow. There's a portion of the film where I guess it's summer when we're there, and when it's in that in between when it's warm and cold, and then you juxtapose that with photographs from the past, and we really get a sense of what it's like.
Well, that's good to hear that you do get a sense of it. One of the things I wanted to show is the beauty of southern Alberta and also the diversity of the landscape.
Yeah.
So you're talking about the cold and the winter, and that's when we were out in southeastern Alberta on the land near Duchess Gem, mm-hmm. where his second ranch was, north of Brooks, which is different not just because of the season, but also because the landscape and the geography of southern Alberta is varied. And I did want to showcase that. I really wanted people to feel like they are here. And then you see other landscapes as well, such as around the Kirkcaldy area where the Mallorys live. Those are all very distinctive types of geography. So I'm glad you noticed that and that it resonated for you.
Yeah, I mentioned the McEwen book a moment ago. What have you found in terms of, because the book came out in the 60s, what have you found about the book, sort of incomplete about Ware's story? And I'm wondering if one could perhaps assign a motive as to McEwen's scholarship.
I don't think I could try to look into Grant McEwen's mind in terms of determining a motive. I think he was a historian who wrote about a lot of different people, a lot of different subjects, and he wrote about the environment as well. He was an early environmental activist, I guess you could call him.
Uh-huh.
So I think his motivation was to tell the stories of Alberta, to write about Alberta, and he saw John Ware as a figure that, was important and could potentially have been forgotten. So I think his motives, or the reason he was inspired to write the story, were good. You know, they came from a good place. Where I find the story lacking is in its portrayal of John Ware. It is clear to me from the voice that Grant McEwen ascribes to John Ware, just the way he has them speaking when he writes dialogue for John Ware, that Grant McEwen didn't know any black people from the South. He couldn't have. I know black people from many different Southern locations and states, and none of them talk like that. And I know people who were, you know, alive in John's Ware. When I was a kid, there were people in my life who would have, you know, who would have spoken the way John Ware would have spoken, and none of them talk like that. You can just see that it's based on kind of an old Hollywood notion of how black people talk. So I think that is a gap. That is a that's you know where he was getting it wrong in one sense. I think there are other things that he perhaps made up in order to flesh out the story, because it's hard to tell a hero's journey if you don't have all the detail that you think you need. So I think there are things in the story that he intended as a story and that people have taken as fact.
Yeah, you interview someone in the film, or I guess you're having a conversation with someone, and they tell you that telling a good story was probably something that motivated him throughout his career, and that's probably clear in reading this book on Ware.
Yes, I would say that is accurate.
So this brings up something that I've been thinking about since I saw the film, the importance of the role of the historian, because essentially the historian, the writer, the filmmaker in this case, is the gatekeeper to history.
Right.
How did you view your role in making this movie? Because you're the person who essentially is introducing Ware to a wider audience at this time. The custodian of history, I mean, that's a very serious role. Is this something that I guess weighed heavily on you as you were making this movie?
Yes, it did. I also was aware that it's actually probably not possible for a historian to be objective. I'm talking about any historian.
Right.
I think we as writers and human beings, we do bring ourselves and our body of knowledge and our worldview to our work. So I think there are historians who write about history who would have us believe that they are unbiased or objective.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. I don't think it's possible. So I was aware that I am not objective when I look at the story, but that I am uniquely positioned as a person who comes out of that same historical context as John Ware, in that my grand ancestors were also enslaved and who also lived in the southern U.S. and also came to Canada and also stayed and built a life here. I think on some level I'm uniquely qualified to tell this story, while acknowledging also that I am, that the story is a part of my blood and bones, and that it has significance for me that I don't think it has for any other person that has written about or tried to tell John Ware's story in the past.
There's another delightful scene in the film where you're walking down the street with Lawrence Hill, and you're showing him different places on the street, and there's this look on his face where you can see just how fascinated he is. It's almost a sort of half smile that comes across his face as he's listening to you. What has it been like when you're making a movie like this? Because this is also another moment in the film where you're speaking to a surveyor who's asking questions about Ware and the land. What is it like to tell people about this story? Because as I said a moment ago, you're introducing him to a wider audience with this film. I'm sure in the course of making the movie, you've had to talk about Ware a lot.
Mm-hmm. I also am delighted by that walk down the street with Lawrence Hill, because everyone who I interviewed for the film, everyone who sings or performs music, everyone who shares the anecdotes from John Ware's life is connected to either the story of John Ware or to my journey with telling the story of John Ware. So Lawrence Hill is the son of a person who was one of the first places that I went to for information about John Ware when I, way back in my 20s, when I started building my file, I read what Lawrence Hill's father had written about John Ware in his enormous undertaking of Canada's Black History that he published decades ago.
Yeah.
So because Lawrence Hill is a person who is also deeply invested in telling the stories of Black history, I thought it would be appropriate to have him there. And I was laughing as I sent him an email after I watched that footage. I said, "You're beaming at me like I'm your favorite cousin." And it was a combination of, he was just thrilled to be introduced to those places where John Ware had occupied space and time and history in the city. He was delighted to walk past those buildings and to ask questions about, okay, yeah, well, where did he go to church, and who did he go to church with, and
yeah.
And all those kinds of, what was the wedding ceremony like? You know, there's a lot of stuff we talked about, obviously, that's not on the screen. So that was a real, that was definitely one of my primary goals, simply to take people to the places and spaces where John Ware lived, where people are not accustomed to thinking of as Black spaces.
Right.
And in the film, I wanted to make the connections between those spaces that John Ware trod and their connections to my own ancestral history here as well, and to other Black history that is very little known.
If someone had watched me watching the film, they would have seen me beaming as I heard the music, because it's just beautiful music in the film, and I gather that's original music, isn't it?
Yes, the vast majority of it is. The very first song you hear is not original. That's
right.
A traditional song that Foster adapted and sings. But yes, there are four songs that were written and performed by my daughter Miranda and Chris Demeanor, who is a songwriter and musician here in Calgary, joins her on one of those songs, and then Cor Blund sings a couple of tunes that are original to him. They're not new. They're from older works, but they really evoke aspects of my own feelings about being from the prairies and being from here, and my feelings about horses.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's most of the music is original.
Yeah,
and I'm glad you like it. I really like it too.
Yeah, I'm trying to, as I was typing up my notes, trying to think how to describe it, because it's influenced by a great deal of, chiefly of course, Ware's story, but it's just it adds so much to the movie, and I understand that I guess some of that music came from the original stage piece that you did on John Ware's life. Is that right?
That's right. When I was working on the play, before it became a play, when I was working on the presentation called John Ware Reimagined, my daughter Miranda was a student at UBC in the creative writing program, and one of her streams was songwriting, because she was already a songwriter by that time. So I called her and I said, I need a country song with soul that describes the flood of 1902 when the Wares lost their house. And then a week later she called me up and played Spring 1902, which is a song you hear at the very end of the film.
Right.
And she's sitting in Union Cemetery.
Yeah.
And just from that moment forward, I realized how all of the musical influences that Miranda was exposed to and immersed in were were exactly what I needed. She just gets it when I tell her what I'm looking for a moment. Mm-hmm. Music is a part of everything I do, all my work. Music is a part of my blood and bones, but I'm not a musician myself. So Miranda really gets what I need for music. And I must say that Chris Demeanor, who also co-wrote music for the play, none of which is in the film, but is also amazing, does a great job as well of understanding what I need. But it's wonderful to have a daughter to turn to when I need a song.
I'm getting chills just you saying, you know, you need this, and, you know, just a couple of words, and then I'm remembering the song at the end, and it just comes together so well. I mentioned that the stage piece, now it's a film. I read somewhere that you're thinking of writing a book later on all of this.
I had decided at some point during the shooting of the film that I did want to create a trilogy of works about him, just because I want to reach as many different people as possible, as many different audiences with the story. And you get a different audience for a film than you would for a play, and get a different audience again for a book. So that's my plan.
Without giving anything away, because I didn't know anything about Ware before I started watching the film. So I obviously had questions about who this person was and why they are important. But after watching the film, and I've been resisting a great deal in my conversation with you, I've got probably more questions now about who John Ware was. After watching the film, and as I said, not to give anything away, I'm sure you're the same way.
Yes. Tricky to answer that question, dancing around spoilers and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think my curiosity about him will perhaps never be fully assuaged. As I point out in the film, it's very difficult to do this kind of research just because of the lack of attention that was paid to our history in the past and the lack of preservation of it. But I think it's true that on some level this film is just another step. It's just another step. And I fully anticipate that perhaps even after my lifetime that this work will carry forward, and that this work will be a part of it, a part of the record of his life.
The release of the film comes at a very important time in our history, in our culture. It also suggests a new place for John Ware in Canada's history. Have you given that much thought? I mean, I know you've been busy making the movie and now releasing it, but you touched on this just a moment ago about where we go from here. I mean, it just seems like the perfect time for a movie. I mean, is that something that you're thinking about as a filmmaker, say?
Yes and no. I have been doing this work for more than 30 years now, and it has always felt urgent to me. Mm. It has always felt vital, and I have had resistors in the past. I have had people literally say, nobody cares about that. That not enough people care about that. We can't publish it because nobody cares. I've heard of other black storytellers, writers, journalists who've had similar things said to them. So this work has been urgent for us for a very long time. And it does seem now that there is more of an audience for these stories, but that's not because the stories themselves are are suddenly important.
Right, yeah.
These stories have always been important. Of course, when I started out making the film, I could not have predicted events that would unfold in the future that would make it so that the film seemed more timely. So my very long answer to your question is yes and no.
I mentioned the book because, as I said, I've got just as many questions now as I did before I started watching the film. I'm going to be careful here in how I dance around this question. The sort of research that happens in the movie, is that continuing? I guess it would be for if you were writing a book, but
yes,
a lot of it seems time-consuming and costly.
Mm-hmm. Very, very time-consuming and incredibly costly. Sometimes people will offer me, you know, $100 to write an article, you know, for a book or a journal, whatever, and they simply don't have a clue how long it can take to find one tiny fragment. So, yes, my work is incredibly expensive for me to do because it can take me 6 months to find, you know, enough to fill one paragraph. So it is very time-consuming, and, yes, it is. It is a question of a race against time and a race against, you know, the basic needs that a person has to feed themselves and house themselves, just in terms of trying to do this work in a way that that allows me to be able to afford to do it.
Right. Yeah. The other thing that I was thinking about, Cheryl, as I was watching the movie, because you're working in the film to try to piece where story together. Do you think we should do a better job in keeping our own history? I mean, a lot of us, I guess, are relying on social media to track everything. That, you know, few of us are writing letters. Do you think we should, I don't know, maybe write letters to the future and put them in a box somewhere?
I think a whole bunch of things. One is that if you're lucky enough to have historical documents in your family, you should make sure to collect those. Make sure that your grandmother's boxes of letters and diaries and stuff don't get thrown out. That kind of material is very important. But I think we do rely too much on social media. And in a way, it's cool to see how a story from history can go viral and people can know about something very quickly. A lot of people can know. At the same time, it's so ephemeral and it just disappears and people are on to the next thing. Our attention span is short, so we need to make sure that those things are not just put out there one time on social media and then lost. That's why I think it's still important to write books. Mm-hmm. Write books, write letters, write it down and make sure it is preserved somewhere.
Cheryl, I've kept you longer than I said I would, but I mean, I just realized I could talk all afternoon with you about where, about your work, and about this film. Congratulations on it. I appreciate your time, and all the best.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoyed the film, and I really appreciate your interest as well.
The film is called John Ware Reclaimed. Visit the Calgary International Film Festival's website if you're in Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, if you want to see the movie, and VIFF.org if you're here in British Columbia and you want to see it virtually through there. At CDFogo is the Twitter handle. Cheryl Fogo joined me on the line from Edmonton in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.